Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
I'm the hootinest, tootinest, shootinest, bobtail wildcat in the West. I'm the fastest gun north, south, east, and west of the Pecos. I'm the...
shut up!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit, Season 2, Episode 2, for Wednesday, January 8th. 8th? It's January 8th already? Is it really?
Time flies.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm co-host Frank Natel.
And Frank, let me tell you something, buddy. I was more than a little worried yesterday. You know?
I hear you. I know you were.
You and I had talked a little bit last night, then a little bit this morning. For everybody who everybody who's interested, a couple of days ago, on the orders, according to our Twitter-in-chief, a couple of days ago, he personally gave the order. His direct order was to launch a drone strike, and they ended up killing the Iranian commander. Frank, I hope I say this guy's name right. Qasem Soleimani? Soleimani. Okay. Hey, Frank, it's not Italian. I can't do it, you know? I'm just taking a shot in the dark. last night, our time, which would have been around 1:30 a.m. local time, this morning, Iran fired more than a dozen ballistic missiles from somewhere in Iran against at least two Iraqi facilities hosting U.S.-led coalition personnel. The missile hit two bases, one in Anbar province and a facility in Erbil, which is the capital of Iraqi's semi-autonomous Kurdish region. Okay. According to the Iraqi military, 22 missiles were launched. It said two of the 17 missiles that were striking, one in the Anbar province did not go off. All five that hit the other, the one in Erbil, did. No casualties have been officially claimed so far. The Iraqi military said that there was no casualties among their forces. I probably should stop right now and let everybody know I'm sourcing Al Jazeera. Iranian television claimed that at least 80 American terrorists were killed in attacks involving 15 missiles. However, no one was able to independently verify where this information came from. Why don't we just stop right there for a second, Frank, and let's talk about the killing and the response before we get into what happened today. What are your thoughts on first? Let's do it step by step. What were your thoughts on the drone strike?
I mean, my very immediate thought was, here's this guy trying to deflect attention away from the impeachment proceeding. That was my immediate thought. And then when I tried to process the actual event and what happened and who was killed, I tried to be a little bit more objective and think about whether or not there was truly a credible threat against the United States or maybe our closest allies that was being stopped. And then as I read about that, the people who are going to have to defend this action and knew they would have to defend this action had very little clear and credible evidence to communicate to us to support why that attack had to happen at that time. Now, I want to make very clear that only if what they say is true, and I put that caveat out there because the more I learn about this, the more I hear that this guy, quote unquote, acted with proxies, which means, you know, I'm not trying to talk above anybody. Maybe a lot of people understand what that means, but that he was orchestrating other people to do his bidding, which was to try to get Americans and Western allies killed through other people's hands. And he was kind of pulling the strings behind the scene. If that's true, and I put that as a big caveat, because I don't know it to be true, but if it's true, I can understand having him on a target list and saying, we have to deal with this guy at some point in some way, fashion, or another. So that being out there, I accept that if that's true, then we have to deal with this guy. But I still have a problem with just the whole thing when you've got people like Pompeo and other folks, Esper, standing up there in front of the cameras, and they don't have real clear and convincing evidence as to why this had to happen now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Frank, I sat there and I listened to these, to a lot of these talking heads, and you know, what a anti-fan, I guess you could say, I am of the Fox Entertainment Network. But they have a tendency to motherfuck anything that doesn't go Trump's way, and then have a tendency to try to explain away things that he, you know, that whenever his actions, they try to motherfuck people who go up against them and then try to explain his actions away. And one of the things I found really, really interesting was the three idiots that are on in the morning kept going back and kept saying the same thing over and over and over again. And they kept saying it over and over and over again. They just changed the verbiage a little bit. And that was it, all the information they have came from the intelligence community. It was the intelligence community that did this. They got Trump acted on data that he got from the intelligence agency. They just went on and on and on and on about this whole thing. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how many hours there are in a year. I mean, yeah, anybody could Google it and find out, but these people will spend how many hours that are left in 2020 doing nothing but bashing the intelligence community, will be calling them the enemy of the people, be calling them the deep state, will tell you how they can't be trusted, how they're just the biggest pieces of shit in the universe, and they can't stand Trump, and they want to do nothing but see him fail and be impeached and get thrown out in the whole nine yards. Except whenever he just out of the blue decides to send a drone to go kill somebody. And then, well, what did you expect the president to do? He got his information from the intelligence community.
Right.
You know, I found that interesting.
Spot on, Patsy. I mean, yeah, it's the hypocrisy and the double standard that's just disgusting. Because, yeah, while the intelligence community told us that the Russians hacked our election, Fox News and all the supporters of Trump wanted to deny the credibility of that. And now they want to lend all the credibility in the world to that same intelligence community. So I have no doubt, like I said, I will trust on face value that this guy plotted and planned to fight us, because that's his raison d'etre. That's his reason for being.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that they found intelligence about this guy saying he's a bad actor in terms of fighting our military.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't doubt that. The question is, you know, there's a lot of people who are against our interest in the world. There are a lot of people who harm our interests and harm American citizens in this world. We don't choose to blow them up, though. We choose to do other things to try to combat that. And there are reasons for that. If you think about it, I don't want to go too far afield, but I'm just going to throw this out there to our listeners. Otto Warmbier was tortured and killed under the watch of Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. We didn't send missiles in a drone strike to kill him because we're concerned that he could launch nuclear weapons far afield and harm mm-hmm. us or our allies very directly. Iran doesn't have those capabilities. Iran's capabilities are very, very regionally limited. And they are a country that we wouldn't want to invade. And they would cost us dearly if we went into a ground war with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, dearly. I'm not saying we wouldn't win. We wouldn't. Yeah. I'm not saying we wouldn't win bad.
Yeah.
But we would lose a lot in doing so. But they're not a country who can strike out from their borders very, very far.
let's not overlook the one big difference between North Korea and Iran is that you have a dictator in North Korea who stroked Trump's ego, right?
Absolutely.
And then they fall in love with these beautiful letters that they were sent to him or some shit like that.
He said it his own self, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. I really wonder if these folks bother to look at, you know, the things that they've done, things that they've said in the past. Trump stood in Helsinki and told everybody, literally everybody on the planet, that he did not trust his own intelligence agencies. He said, he was standing next to Putin. He said, I believe him.
Yeah, he has no reason not to tell the truth about that, is what he said, basically.
Yeah. And I find it interesting that these so-called patriots now are looking at what Trump did and his reasoning for doing it. His trumpeted reason for doing it is because they got intelligence about these guys. Look, no one on either side of the aisle, no Democrat, no Republican, and I promise you, there's not a fucking independent anywhere who is not denying that this was a bad guy. Okay, or is denying that he's a bad guy. I should say, this guy's a piece of shit. But don't forget, too, there is a rule everywhere. And I teach it to every law enforcement person that I've ever had on my floor. And between my son and I, we've taught folks from 27 different states. Okay. And one of the rules that you always have, they call it a use of force continuum. Other people, you know, other places call it different things. In civilian life, they call it the Cooper Code. Basically, what it says is you are required to understand the difference that we're talking about law enforcement as opposed to this situation. But just hear me out for a second. You are required to respond with equal force. Okay. In other words, if you approach a subject and they are very calmly discussing things with you and answering your questions and not acting like an asshole, you are required to respond in kind. If this clown takes a swing at you, you are required to use physical means in order to settle him down, to subdue him, to take him in, to do whatever the case may be. You are not required to use lethal force unless you feel there is a danger. And that's a whole other story. But the point is, you are required in kind. What is the reasoning that they went after him is because of some, you know, contractor that he killed. Well, that doesn't mean they're sending a drone to kill this clown at a fucking airport someplace is not responding in kind. Okay, that's you know, the kids in Milwaukee, wherever the hell it is, were throwing snowballs at cars and the fucker got out and started shooting them. Right? That's the kind of response that we just gave this guy. The entire world had every right to look at what we did. Like, what the fuck are you people doing? You know? And I sit there and I wonder, what's next? Because his response to this and this over-the-top response to this, if it's what it is, if, you know, we're taking them at their word, he just raised the ante. And he raised it big. It wasn't, you know, okay, you know, I hit you, you hit me. You hit me once, I hit you twice. It was, you know, you hit me and so I blew up your house. There's going to be a response. And this response that we saw last night that you and I were talking about, which is part two of this whole, this short range ballistic missile attack that we weathered was almost a symbolic response. And before we start talking about, do you really think that's it or not? What did you think about that response and how that was handled? Not talking about today, but everything that we talked about last night up until Trump's presser today that he was over half an hour late for.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. You've hit something that's really important to, I think we really have to, we have an obligation and responsibility to, at this point, we're in our second year of doing this, and people, you know, who do listen to us, listen for political commentary. And sometimes I think that they may listen for facts that they don't hear other places. And, you know, I want to say that in response to what you just said, it's really important to reflect upon what we've been talking about today, that this guy, Soleimani, may have put in place some actions that led to that contractor's death. And if he did, he should be dealt with in some way. But, you know, what do we do in our country if somebody causes somebody else's killing, causes somebody else's death? We don't go blow them up with a drone. We put them on trial, and we find them either guilty or acquit them of the action that they did. So we've just heard some very thin information about the possibility that he was somehow behind the American. Nobody said he was standing there and pulled the trigger. Nobody said that he did anything to kill this guy. There is no proof of that. But however, if he was behind it, he should be dealt with. In addition to that, the funny thing, not funny, but curious thing, is that Trump himself had originally opted for a different course of action. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to go kill Soleimani. It was to do something else. However, when our embassy was attacked in Baghdad, apparently Trump got very angry and responded angrily and called the folks who had the intelligence meeting with and said, I want our response to now be to go kill Soleimani. And the military and the actors who conducted that assassination, or whatever you want to call it, taking out Soleimani, they had to scramble to find his location and also scramble to make sure that there were no innocent bystanders that would be affected by that they had to find the right opportunity to make mm-hmm. the kill. So it's important for us to, I think, speak on this fact that even Trump himself had not opted for that extreme measure based upon the death of the contractor until our embassy got attacked. And then he was angry because he felt like it was a slap in his face. And he wanted, it was about him. See what I'm saying? It was about him. It wasn't about the contractor's death. It was about the scar or the black eye it would leave on him watching our embassy get attacked. And he didn't want to be, quote unquote, responsible for another Benghazi.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Frank. And even though he fails to realize that it wasn't an embassy in Benghazi that was attacked. But in any case, so we had a very, let's say, restless night. Maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but we had a night where both my wife and I went to bed, and we just kind of laid there, like, really not sure what's going to happen. I mean, you know, don't forget, we're talking about somebody who, from the day he was inaugurated, literally that day where he had to tell everybody that his, you know, his crowd was bigger than Obama's, right?
Right.
He then goes, in his last 3 years, he decided to do everything he could to destroy everything Obama built, including the agreement, the nuclear agreement with Iran. He decided to tear that up and throw it the fuck away. So obviously he has a hard on for Obama, and honest to God, I thought it was just Obama because, let's face it, he, in the back of his mind someplace, he knew Obama was the man he could never be. But then you started seeing how he went after Kaepernick, how he went after Maxine Waters, how he went after a few others. And, you know, it's funny that all of these folks that I mentioned all have one thing in common. You know?
They have brown skin. They have a lot more melanin than he does.
Yeah, they're a little darker than he is. I am firmly convinced, Frank, and I'm I'm sorry to say it. I truly am sorry to say it. But I've never seen somebody in such a strong position in this country who is blatantly as racist as he is. I mean, now don't forget, you know, you and I were both born in the late 60s, so a lot of changes had happened since, you know, from the whenever we were born. And we've seen a lot of changes, a lot of good positive ones. And I'm not criticizing the change. We can criticize how slow it's been, but this guy looked at everything that happened in Charlottesville and decided that there were bad people on both sides. We can go on down the line, right? I don't think that this whole Iran thing is as much about anybody, and I think you hit it right on the head, as it is about him. And my wife and I laid in bed last night, and before that, you know, you and I were texting back and forth a little bit, and what did I say? You know, my son's 19. You know, your boy, yeah. Luckily your boy's a little younger, but, you know, your daughter isn't.
No, and we're living in an age where they're not going to differentiate, and I understand and get that.
You know, yeah. I mean, you sit there and you say, oh my God. You know, and it was different whenever it was Bush. I wasn't nearly as concerned. Of course, my son wasn't old enough yet, but I never looked at Bush the second. The first Bush, I thought, handled the Middle East. Honestly, I thought he handled it pretty good. But the second one, even though he lied about the WMDs and everything else, I never really felt like anything he's doing is really going to hit home. Yeah, we're going to send troops, and you know, I've had guys on my floor who were over there as a result of Bush's policies, and they're just fucked up. I mean, they're just. I had a guy, and you probably heard us talk about him, and I'm not going to mention his name, job was, you know, and houses, and how did you walk up to him? You drop a hand, he just blew women and children thing in there, and he never recovered from it. He's permanently damaged. But this is the first time where I sat there and said, this guy is crazy enough, he's unstable enough, he's small enough that I fear for my son. I fear for your daughter. I had a girl that was on my floor who enlisted in the Air Force, and she just graduated basic training, I think in November, you know, October, November. And I worry about her. And I'm worried about our kids, and I'm thinking this guy is crazy enough. He's unstable enough. You know, I'm repeating myself. He's small enough that we have teenagers, we have young adults here in this little backward part of the world, this little small town, who are in danger simply because he still feels the shadow of the black president.
It's scary. It's disheartening. It's, you know, I'm understating it, but I'll say this, you know, the other thing that just amplifying your point, you know, I want to go back and kind of tie in a couple little things that we talked about earlier, but just right on your point right now, your son is right in the prime age. My daughter's right in the prime age. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, people that you've been in their lives because of your teaching and training are right in the prime of this spot where they're going to be potentially affected by this. I would say that if you look back at Germany circa 1933 through 39, and especially 39 when war broke out, they had one of the world's premier militaries. They were, you know, they were the top of the food chain as far as military goes. And right now we're top of the food chain as far as military goes. But when they extended themselves too far, meaning the Germans, they got to a point where they became quickly decimated by two fronts of battle against very, very formidable enemies. They were fighting the English and the Americans on the Western Front, and they were fighting the Russians and possibly some other forces on the Eastern Front, but mostly the Russians. And the Russians decided to completely decimate the German army. That was the end goal at the end of that war. They totally destroyed the German army, and then started to destroy German towns as they went across Germany to make their way to Berlin. But my point is this: when there were no more of these elite forces and no more of the greatest army in the world at the time, greatest military machine in the world, which was the German army, what did they turn to? They started putting rifles in 14 and 15 year olds' hands.
Yeah.
So from 1939, when they were the greatest military in the world, to about 1944, 45, it quickly turned to the 14-year-olds. And what time span is that? About 5-6 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
So with Dante right now, 10 years old, 4 or 5 years from now, where does that put him?
Puts him right. He's going to be carrying a gun.
You know, and it's not a future that I would want for your son. It's not a future I want for my son. It's not a future I want for my daughter. It's not a future I want for anybody's kids. And even more than that, I'll say this. We don't have a draft in this country because we have extreme poverty that just is denied. And we have barriers that are put in place to people that are denied by people who know better and should know better. And those people choose. You know, my grandfather was one of them. My grandfather, my father was one of them. Your father was one of them. They chose to go in the military to make their lives a better life, to provide a family for their families, to provide a foundation for their families eventually, to break out of the cycle of poverty, to give themselves an opportunity. It's not all bad. I'm not saying that. But that's why we don't have a draft, because people turn to the military, and we have a lot of kids that come from impoverished neighborhoods. It's not the rich man's kids, the rich one's kids that are filling these – that are a part of this military right now. And that's who's going to go off first to die in these wars.
Yeah. I think I shared a meme on Twitter where it was something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, that the White House doctors have already declared that both of Trump's sons have bone spurs.
Yeah.
But it makes a point, you know, it just goes on to reinforce your point that it's the poor, it's the underprivileged who are going to pay for this clown's actions. And I would sit there and say, well, you know, these fuckers voted for him, but you know, no, 6 million more didn't. So you know, you can't make that argument. Anyway, let's moving on a little bit. Earlier today, Trump has a presser, and he was like 35, 36 minutes late to his own presser or something like that, which, you know, a lot of people complained about, and sometimes I think they're just looking to complain about, because I don't remember very many presidents in my life who were actually on time for their pressers. I mean, it happened, you know, here and there, but generally speaking, they're always running behind. I'm notoriously late. No, he wasn't 36 minutes late, but you know, he was notoriously late for pressers. Bush was notoriously late. I can remember Reagan being late for pressers. But I don't know if you saw it, but for anybody who didn't see it, just let me tell you how this thing went. The doors open. And this wave of, I don't know, we'll say 10 folks. Pence was there. Pompeo was there. I want to say at least a few members of the Joint Chiefs, because they were all in military guard, dressed military uniforms. So I'm assuming it was the Joint Chiefs. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. They come walking in, and they kind of take their places where they're supposed to. And then Trump comes walking in, and honest to God, Frank, I'm not making this shit up. Let lightning strike me dead if I am. He's fucking backlit, right? So he's walking in silhouette through the doors. I'm like, all we need is smoking fucking Hulk Hogan here.
Right. You know?
I mean, it was ridiculous whenever he made this entrance, and I'm thinking, holy shit. This guy, 3 years in, he still doesn't fucking get it. But anyhow, he went on, and during his presser, first of all, he lied about a lot of shit. Of course, he always lies, which is why we, as we said earlier, we're second guessing the reasoning that they're giving for killing this guy to begin with. He comes in and saying that, you know, these missiles were a result of them. The money that they got from the Obama administration is why that they got these missiles to begin with, and on and on and on and on. Just lie after lie after lie after lie. And I'm to the point where I don't even care that he's lying anymore, because it just happens so often. It's like whenever you're a parent, whenever your child continues to do the same thing over and over and over again that you punish him for, you don't even care why he's doing it anymore. It's just mechanics now, right? It's just, all right, you're going to punish them, and they're going to go in their room and they're going to do whatever. Then the day later, they're going to do the same shit again. It's okay, I'm going to punish you again. And the cycle is just going to continue to be, right? He's going to lie. He can't help himself. He's too small to stand up to anything. But what he did say was, Iran appears to be standing party's concern, a very good thing for actually, yes, it and he was actually very, I won't say very correct, because now I sound like I'm talking like him, but I wonder what's going to happen. Oh, he also said, we must not break away from the remnants of the Iran deal, or JCPOA, and we must all work together toward making a deal with Iran that would make the world a safer and more peaceful place. This, of course, I'm taking these quotes from the Times now, the New York Times. I will sit there here and tell you, here we go. It all goes back to his fixation on Obama, that this stuff has happened. But Frank, you and I both live in a very depressed community. And with the influx of narcotics, the influx of drugs that have come in from Detroit into our area, we have gone from 3 or 4 degrees of separation with people who are addicted or drug addicts to 1 to 2 degrees separation. Maybe not you personally. I have. And you know that story. But we, I mean, as a community, okay? Frank, I'm telling you, this guy's hopped up.
Yeah.
This guy, when you saw him today, even the way he was breathing, I'm sitting here, I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, holy shit, this guy's hopped up on Adderall. I mean, you can see it. And yeah, it is absolutely, you have somebody who is unstable, who suffers from little man's disease, and on top of that is a fucking drug addict. And I'm telling you, Frank, that presser that I saw today, even though he said a lot of the right things, even between the lies, scared me more than the things than the bombing last night. It really did. Because this guy's unstable.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I watched some clips of it. It's scary. You know, I don't think that there's any, really, just watch the ones that aren't edited, because I don't want anybody saying that there's, you know, editing going on to make this look worse than what it is. It's bad enough if you just watch the whole clip. You know, just watch what he did. He's sniffing, you know, numerous times, you know, just continuously sniffing. And he's been doing this for so long. It's not like the guy's got a cold or allergies or something like that. It's, you know, it's always going on. He was slurring words, mispronouncing words. Look, mispronouncing is fine. I mean, I get it. The Trump MAGAs say, who cares if you can't speak like somebody else? You know, I get it. But mispronouncing words and slurring, the slurring is
is indicative of some kind of problem going on. I don't know if it's neurological, psychological, if it's drug induced or whatever, but there's an issue there. There's an issue there. He slurs words too much. There's something going on. And that's scary when you got somebody who's leading policy, especially policy on foreign issues, on geopolitical issues that are of such importance that, and we're not sure if this guy's in his right mind. And I would venture to say there's indications there that he's not. So it's very scary. It's very scary in that sense. And it's scary in the things that he's saying and the timing of the things that he's doing. You know, you look back at his own tweets from when Obama was in office and he said stuff like, I guarantee you Obama will go to war with Iran to get reelected. I guarantee you Obama will go to war with Iran to get himself out of, to get his numbers up favorably in the polls. You know, there were three occasions at least that were cited where he projected that Obama would be doing something with Iran to try to curry favor with the American public. And that's exactly what he did here. I mean, you know, I just go back to what we talked about earlier. There is a less of a chance of direct military confrontation from Iran than there would be with fighting with, you know, Russia, North Korea, or any of the other bad actors in the world. And you've got a situation where, look, if there are proxies or terrorist activities that occur, because look, this is what I wanted to say earlier. You reminded me when you said it was like a symbolic hit that Iran made on those outposts, on those military installations that we have in Iraq. That was symbolic. Absolutely. Like you said, what they're going to do is they're going to plan. They'll have a strategy to plan for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And what they're going to do is they're going to exact their revenge in different ways. It won't all be militarily. And to come out today, the timing of this is the craziness of it, just the absolute madness of this man. To come out today and to essentially declare that Iran is standing down and that this is going to de-escalate now because this is all there was, is absolute lunacy.
Yeah, it is. And so I guess my question for you is, do you think, and I don't think it's going to happen like this, but I'm going to use it as an example. So, you know, I understand what I'm saying. I see a upswing and an increase in terrorist activities happening now. I'm looking at NFL playoffs. I'm looking at things like this and I'm thinking, holy shit, these are prime targets now, because I don't think this was a tit for tat thing with what Iran did last night, as much as it was a warning that we better have your attention because it's coming. You don't know when or where, but it's coming. And I think that was the reason for this symbolic strike. It was, okay, here you go. We'll give you this one since you're expecting it. We'll give you this one. But if you think we're done, you're out of your fucking mind. We are just starting. And I think that's what last night did. I hope I'm wrong. And, you know, if you can, go ahead and talk me off the ledge.
Well, I'd like to, Patsy, but that's my big fear. That's my big fear. I think we're headed for, you know, we're in post 9/11 world where we've become, you know, accustomed to certain invasions of our privacy and invasions of our everyday lives to be able to keep ourselves safe. But I think those things are only going to increase because we have to, in necessity. And it's like the wet dream for the wet dream for the people who are, you know, the descendants of the Nazis and the descendants of the Stasis of the world, and who would love to have nothing but a police state in our country. So I think either way you look at it, I hate to be pessimistic. I'm going to be optimistic in this sense. I think that we have an awakening like never before in our country. And it could change if we the people change it. And this is what I told you last night in that text. If we the people are willing to change it, it can change. If we're not willing to change it and to make the sacrifices soon, then we will pay the price one way or the other, whether that's through actual terrorist touches, bad touches on our land, bad touches on our people as we go about the globe, or we'll pay the price by having a very, very, very different way of life than we even envision at this point in time. And it's going to get, it could get very, very ugly to the point where people don't even quite, they don't see it. They don't understand it. But I'm going to tell you, go back and watch documentaries on the NVKD under Stalin.
Yeah.
I mean, go back and watch the Stasi in East Germany. That wasn't that long ago. That wasn't long ago at all. I mean, the guy that ran the Stasi in East Germany gave up power in like 1989, something like that, 1991, somewhere in that range. I mean, it's like so recent. And they were intercepting people's mail. They were reading through it. They were listening to all communications, telephone communications. They were, you know, of course, putting people in prison for dissenting against the government. You know, it's scarily close to me.
Yeah, it is. You have to be a student of history, right? What's the saying, Frank? You know, those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it, right?
Yes, sir.
The human race is we are animals who we like to repeat ourselves, right? History always repeats itself. We don't stray too far away. We always come, everything comes back around to us. Always does. It is a shame that we have to sit there or sit here and have this conversation. I mean, it's good for our pod. Don't get me wrong. I'm kind of thrilled about that, but in the course of our lives and the things that on this pod, you and I could be talking about is not things that I enjoy talking about, right? These are not subjects that I enjoy discussing, not just with you, but just in general, right? Because we've been down this path. You mentioned, you know, 1940s Germany, how many times, right? We've been down this path. We see where this leads. Now, that might sound like, you know, conspiracy theory or we're overreacting or whatever, but I would much rather overreact to this than do nothing and then all of a sudden we're stuck. Now what do we do? Right? So folks, pay attention. All I can tell you is, and the only thing I can tell to everyone listening is, I don't care if you agree with us or not. Okay, I'd much rather you did, but you know, as long as you're listening to us, believe me, I'm thrilled. But pay attention. Watch what's going on. Because that's the only way you're going to be able or be in a position to influence what happens. If you start paying attention after the fact, it's too late. The, you know, the tire already started rolling downhill. You're not going to stop it. You're not going to catch it.
And I think to say, you know, to expand upon your point is to say this. Don't underestimate the willingness of people to do bad. Don't underestimate the willingness of our own government to manipulate situations to put our individual people and our collective people in our country in a worse position than they are. Because, you know, government around the world, including our own, doesn't always act in the best interest of the population. And more often than not, the more powerful they get, the chances are that they're going to abuse that power. What's the saying? You know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Something like that.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of where we're approaching. When we don't question authority, you know, this is why those folks who go in droves to Fox News, because they want a cheerleader for the president. They want a cheerleader for that. That's not what the job of the news is. The Fourth Estate is to hold them accountable. The Fourth Estate is, why do they think it's liberal leaning? It's not liberal leaning. It's holding people to account. And they don't like it when you're holding their deity to account. And now we're crossing into that power struggle of saying, this person now is getting absolute power. You know, we've got a country where people who are going to say, like, I don't want to question this because it's just easier for me to put my head down and go to work every day. And we've talked about that to an extent before. And I understand it and I get it. And it's also, you know, you've got these true believers out there who are going to be rah-rah behind the president no matter what. You know, yes, they're only 30-something percent, but that's a strong, loud 30%. And then you've got the haters who are saying, wait a minute, this guy's an absolute maniac. And there's about, you know, that are willing to stand up and do anything. And there's about 30% of those, 35% maybe of those folks who are just willing to stand up and do everything to stop this. And then you've got the other third of people who are like, I just can't deal with them. This, man, it's too much for me. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't believe half of it. I don't believe what Trump's telling me. And I don't believe what the other side's telling me. I'll just go stick my head in the sand.
Yeah. You know, I remember a little while after my wife and I got married. When I say a little while, I mean a decent number of years. She decided to convert from Methodist to Catholicism. And so you have to take the classes, right? So her and I would go to, I remember it was on Wednesday nights, it was down St. Vitus, down at the school, down St. Vitus, every Wednesday night. And Father John ran the classes. And I remember something that he said one night, and my wife has been, my wife and I were going on 25 years. I would say she's Catholic now, you know, 15 of those 25, maybe even 20 of those. I honestly, it's been, she'll probably shoot me, but she doesn't listen. He said, and like I said, I'll never forget this because it's prophetic. He said, if you ever want to truly appreciate your religion, always question it. And I sat there and I said, damn. And it was one of those things that I just kind of took with me. And I kind of use it everywhere I go, right? If you ever truly want to appreciate your government, always question it. If you always want to appreciate your society, always question it. If you want to appreciate no matter what it is, always question it. So, you know, you want to put your head in the sand or you just want to go to Fox Entertainment and just have them stroke your ego, you will never appreciate what you have because you never question it. You just go along with it and regurgitate whatever they say, and you get numb. And so the only thing I can say, always, no matter what it is, always question it, because the answers you get will make you appreciate what you have.
That's right. And what do you love whenever you're teaching a kid? You love them to question. You love them to not stop where you've given them the information. You don't want to be the spoon feeder. You want them to keep questioning. You want them to keep questioning because that means their mind is working and it's working. And you as a teacher, you love when your student starts to surpass you because you see, this is my job. I'm trying to impart on this child or this person, this student, the ability to be a better thinker than I ever was. And you try, the only way they're ever going to get there is to be a questioner, right?
Yep. Yep. I remember Grandmaster Pellegrini telling us one day at a seminar in Chicago, only a fool learns from his mistakes. A wise man learns from somebody else. So you're always questioning, right? You're always watching and learning and checking things out and trying to understand things. Frank, great pod today. Is there anything you want to say before we stick a fork in this thing?
I'll say this. Thank you to all our listeners. I know it's your job, and I don't want to take away from it, but I want to just say, please talk to your friends, talk to your family. Don't be afraid to, I mean, don't talk politics because that's the bombshell, but that's the bombshell. That's the conversation ender, but talk about the dangers that we're facing in our society and that, you know, we need to be awake and we need to work together as human beings. And we need to understand that our purpose here is to help each other. And yeah, you know, we have to hold other people to account, but that includes our own folks. So like you said, pay attention, ask questions. Thanks for listening. Pray, you know, if that's your persuasion, whether, you know, whatever your faith is, do say a lot of prayers. I think it can help and it can change things myself personally. So, I mean, if you are of that persuasion, then say a lot of prayers for peace and say a lot of prayers for some intercession. We need it in the world, not just in the things we're talking about, but if you look at Australia, you know, and Puerto Rico, there's a lot going on and people need help. So pray for that.
Absolutely afraid I prayed as I get older. And almost none of it is ever myself. Anyhow, thank you everybody. Like Frank and I always say, like Master Grant and I always say, your time is very valuable, and you're willing to spend that time with us means so much to us. You do not understand just how important it is to us that, excuse me, that you're willing to pay attention, that you're willing to spend that time, that you're willing to devote some of your time, your busy to what, you know, we have to say. So we truly, truly appreciate it. We really do. If you like what you hear, please don't hesitate to help us out on Patreon. You can do it for as little as a dollar. But every little bit helps. We had, you know, we've had some nice feedback over the last year. Hopefully we get some more. But until next week, Frank, you were as amazing as you've always been. Until next week, folks, all I can say is, you know, right here, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't understand that, far too young to be listening to our podcast. So until next week, for Frank and for myself, goodbye, good luck, and God bless. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh** with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Sh**.